Welcome again on to Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. I just wanted to go into a little, I'm going to do a little series on some of the new coaches, some of the new situations here. It's not necessarily going to be in order, but I'm going to go through and, over the next couple of weeks here as staffs get finished up, talk about, you know, some of the changes, watch the press conferences and do a little work on some of the stats. So I spent a couple of nights ago looking at some offensive stats and just some play calling stuff. I was pretty interested by some of that. So I'm going to start with Atlanta and just some notes on the coach there, Arthur Smith. I've been interested in him for a while. His father actually I believe his name's Fred Smith. He was the, I believe he's the CEO of FedEx. It was like one of the founders of FedEx. So he comes from financial background, although it's interesting because consistently, I think Arthur Blank brought this up, and I saw a couple other news reports. No one really knew that. Like, his coworkers didn't know that. It took people like years to kind of figure that out. It wasn't something that he really led with, which probably is a good indication of his relatability and all that sort of stuff. That he doesn't, you know, he's not walking around with the billionaire child type of syndrome. So that was a notable thing. Arthur Blank also mentioned his reference checks came back really well. Unsolicited calls from Hall of Famers, including Joe Gibbs, which was interesting. He was on the coaching staff at Joe Gibbs. That was like one of his first tours in the NFL. And Joe Gibbs and Arthur Blank had a relationship, and they were calling references and didn't actually call Joe Gibbs. Joe Gibbs voluntarily called and said, you should hire this guy. So I thought that was pretty notable. A pretty amazing stat that I heard Arthur Blank reference. He was in Tennessee through three coaching changes and survived and advanced through all of those changes in staff. So basically, you know, the coach gets fired. He comes in. I think it was Munchak. Vrabel was the last one. There was someone else in there too. He survived all three of them and advanced to ultimately become the offensive coordinator at the end there. So that was when LaFleur went to Green Bay. Arthur Smith came in. I remember it was pretty maligned. They were like, oh, this tight end coach who no one ever knows about is going to be the head coach, or is going to be the offensive coordinator. And at the time, I remember looking into it, just thinking, you know, any time that there's a narrative that sort of drives, I'm always interested in like what the other side actually is. And it was really fascinating because he talked a lot about his process and you know, some of the analytics and, you know, some of the insight that he sought out of the NFL in business and these sorts of things. That was pretty interesting. And he's kind of a cerebral guy. So that stuck out. But that three coaching changes, he survives and advances through all three changes. It's pretty rare for that to happen. So that's a good indication of his, you know, of his work ethic and that sort of thing. The themes that Arthur Blank hit on, he said that kept coming up in his background checks: hardworking, humble, always putting people in a position to win. And that's really the thing that I think sticks out to me in all of this is the is really sort of his adaptability, which is a word that he kept using. He really declined to exercise to judge the roster in any way. Doesn't know the GM, but you know, they sort of both report up the chain. He doesn't report directly to the GM. He reports to the, I believe it's the vice president of football operations or something like that, whoever the person is above them in the chain of his name's Rich McKay, above him in the pecking order. That's where they report. So there will be an interchange of sort of the personnel, but Arthur Smith declined to really say anything specific about it. Adapt to personnel was a thing he used multiple times. He did it in the context of offensive line, the rushing game, the red zone. It's just something he kept repeating, which I thought was really interesting. Not saying, hey, I'm going to come in and run my system, very much like, hey, we're going to have an outside zone base, but you know, we'll do other things to go from there. In a very, believable and sort of thought out way he discussed that. Said he was looking forward to working with Matt Ryan. Again, take that for what it's worth. Affirmatively said he's going to call the plays. And he said foundation, you know, wide zone's the foundation, but it's not rigid. And I think that's an interesting, like, that's a foundation but not rigid is probably a really good dynasty slogan if you were to think about it, right? This is what we're going to do, but we can be flexible off of it, right? This is kind of where we're going to go and be flexible off of that. So we'd have to make that a tagline for a future AOD. One thing also that I always find it interesting when coaches and other people, strategy, folks, they look to other sports, and because that's something that I try and do a lot of. And I think if we just sort of get a, one track mind, towards what we're looking at, right? If we're looking at, just football or whatever, and you're not thinking outside the box at all, I think you can really miss some opportunities. And he said this multiple times, and I didn't even pick up on it, what he was talking about. I thought he was talking about the play, but he said they don't want to play isolation football. And so I thought he meant, like an ISO run, kind of like a lead run, whatever, where they're trying to isolate a linebacker. And he said it like three or four times, and all of a sudden at the end he was kind of like, isolation, like in basketball, where an offense just flows through one player, and you're just basically, everyone else is kind of standing around, and he's doing all the work, and you're just kind of flowing through that. I don't want to be that. Oh, that was pretty interesting in terms of analogizing those things. So I'm a sucker for analogizing running backs, analogizing football to basketball. So I thought that one stuck out. I will say, in terms of just looking at some of the stuff, so I did some breakdowns on just some stats. I'm going to do some stuff for the site ultimately, but I just want to do some breakdowns here, looking at some of these stats. And one of the things I looked at was basically designed runs, the percentage of plays that are designed passes. So what I mean by that is that they're dropbacks. So Pro Football Focus, actually, and this is a great stat because it allows you to sort of look at offenses a little bit more. It tells you the percentage of times that the quarterbacks drop back to pass. And then it spreads out. It treats dropbacks in a couple of different ways. If you're sacked, it's basically pass attempts plus sacks and scrambles, which is really good because you can draw out from it, hey, is that a design run or a design pass? It really gets to something a little bit more, kind of looking at it, really, who's more more pass friendly and who's more, so a good example of this is Arizona, right? They had 575 pass attempts. Okay, like when you look at that, like, it's good, but where does that really rank? Well, they drop back to pass 657 times, and we're amongst the highest in the league in scramble rate, right? So that's actually, some of those rushing attempts. So when it says that, when there's rushing attempts of 392, right, that looks like a lot, but when you really think about it, it's a lot less in terms of the skew of their play call. So that's the thing to note there. Might actually be something to the yards per route run there too, although it'd be interesting to look at. But anyways, so you look at those sorts of things and you can see. So I will say that they had positive game script, so some of that goes into this, but they called passes on 52.73% of their passes. That was 30th in the league. So they averaged 7.89 yards per route run, touchdown rate. A touchdown rate of 6.8%. So that was good for third in the league. That can be a little fluky, but that's consistently been something that they've been pretty good at. I notably did. I just ran a quick regression on on touchdown rate versus play action percentage, and there was a small, a very, very, very small amount, but it explains about 5% of the touchdown rate. So a little fraction there, but I'm not going to say it's super impactful. I'd be interested to look at, I think, some more, some different stats on that to sort of get at what touchdown rate does, you know, and sort of how we can maybe predict it a little bit better than it just being random. Okay, so that was that. Okay, so like I said, the designed dropbacks 30th in the league. Okay, in terms of percentage, I think what's really interesting is play action pass. They were second in the league in play action passing percentage. That was 34.85%, and they were 9.7 yards per attempt. That is a 41.2% improvement over what their non-play action passing play calls were. Right, so that's massive. That's up in the top three of the league in that stat. So they were really, really good on play action. As they ran it a lot, right? They ran a lot of they called a lot of play action plays. And their performance was top three or four in the league in terms of over non-play action plays. So that's a huge, huge edge. I would just say in terms of Tannehill, Pro Football Focus has a metric called basically expected points. So he had an expected points per game of 17.2. He actually was at 21.6, right? So an average of there's a rounding error in there, but it's 4.5. It says it's 4.4, but it looks like there's a rounding error, so it's 4.5. When you carry out some of the decimals, so that's that there. So again, that's pretty significantly overperforming. When you look at Matt Ryan, his expected points per game last year, 19.9. I think this is 4-point passing touchdown, but this is just the metric they use. So expected was 19.9. He had 18.6. So he performed 3 points worse per game than Ryan Tannehill, and way underperformed, right? So if you sort of look, he was negative 1.3, Tannehill was positive 4.5. So that's a pretty massive difference. And so when you look at what Atlanta was doing in terms of some of their play calling, they were up there in terms of total attempts. Matt Ryan led the league, and he was a top three or so in terms of actual dropbacks. So he threw, they threw it on 64.56% of their plays. So they threw it a lot, but they actually ran a ton of plays. So that was 15th in the league in terms of ratio there. Again, some of the stuff was pretty lackluster. Their touchdown rate yards per attempt, excuse me, was middle of the pack, right? It was right at 16th. Touchdown rate was at 20th, right? So again, that's not necessarily all that predictive, but if you jump from 20th to like 10th, right? That's a little over a percentage point. You're just racking up some more touchdowns. That can add up over the course of a season. So that's just a little bit below the median there on last year. And when you look at what Tennessee was, they were third, right? So again, I'm not sure necessarily that's all that's predictive, but we'll see there. I think the big thing in terms of where I really can see an edge is in play action. So play action, Tennessee, like I said, was second. Atlanta was 15th, right? So they ran it on 26.75%. So basically 26.75% of the time. That is, like I said, middle of the pack. Matt Ryan, 8.9 yards per attempt in terms of play action compared to non-play action. He was at 6.8. So again, we're seeing a 2 yards per attempt difference. So I do think there's plenty of opportunity there to really extract some more efficiency out of this offense, and I think that's going to be the one thing we see. I'm not sure necessarily who's going to be the beneficiary outside of Matt Ryan. I think this helps Matt Ryan, whoever the quarterback is. I think there's a non-zero chance that someone other than Matt Ryan, but I like the offense as a whole in terms of
maybe it's a little bit less passing, but more some more efficient stuff. I think that's certainly possible. I don't think that Arthur Smith is this big run ideologue. I think that's just kind of the gift that was given to him with Derrick Henry. So that would just be the flip side of it. I don't think he's, this Dan Campbell sort of, we're going to play barbarian football. It's not really Arthur Smith. He's just sort of adapting to his personnel. So that's really what worked, I think, for them in terms of, hey, I have one of the top running backs in the league. Atlanta doesn't have that, so I don't think he's going to necessarily be a devotee of, you know, trying to run the ball 48% of snaps. I think that's just kind of the hand that they had to play. So outside of that, yeah, so that's, I think, really the big thing that I'm looking for is sort of how does that take shape, take form. Maybe we see a little bit more rushing. I think some of those numbers have to do with score differential as well. Atlanta's trailing, losing games. Tennessee's up, winning games, right? So that's a little bit of that natural passing rate. It fluctuates based on that. So that's really the big thing that I think the takeaway is, I think there's plenty of room there for Matt Ryan to grow. And I think some of the expectation stuff, we can get that higher. And if he performs at about baseline, I think we can see a few points per game improvement and see him from, you know, somewhere in the in a middling range to maybe more in a quarterback one range wouldn't shock me all that much. So all right, well, that'll do it for this episode, the Atlanta Falcons. Until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we will talk again very soon.